This episode of the Halloween Podcast is brought to you by Acorns, the app that invests your change automatically. If you're like me, you have zero inside of your savings for future you. What Acorns does is rounds up all of your debit card purchases and invests that change for you automatically. I got started months ago and my account is slowly growing for future me. I didn't even notice it coming out of my bank account. It's that subtle. Support the Halloween Podcast by signing up using our link. You get a $5 sign-on bonus, and so do we. Just go to thehalloweenpodcast.com/acorns, click on the banner, and get signed up. That's thehalloweenpodcast.com/acorns. Now let's get the show started. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Halloween Podcast. I am your host, Lyle Perez, and today I have the guys from the Dissecting Fiction Podcast with me, Steve and Vinny. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Lyle.
So you guys, I had you come on because we are going to talk about, we went on a journey with this one. We sat down and we watched The Last Halloween. Do you guys remember that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's unforgettable.
It definitely is.
I didn't have much experience with it, but Steve showed me it one time, and since then we've talked about it quite a bit.
Yeah, it definitely sticks with you.
It does, trust me, because I lost all my notes. I'm going to say that right now because it might seem like I'm not really going to be saying much, probably because all my notes are just gone. I don't know what happened to my Word document. But one thing I do remember writing down is in like the first, I'd say 5 minutes of the show, it brought back a lot of nostalgic memories for me, only because it looked exactly like I remember Halloween looking when I was a kid. But then after that, it just went downhill.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's super 90s. It's like the most 90s Halloween special that I've come across, which is why, you know, I was eager to start off with this one.
So when did this one come out?
This came out in 91, October 28th, 1991. But it is worth mentioning that it does like have a bit of life to it because like obviously we're talking about it still. But even in 93, the Mars Corporation, the candy corporation who sponsored this TV special, was still heavily featuring the show and its characters in their promos and their in-store displays for candy around Halloween time.
Yeah, I think that's really bizarre. I mean, I have no recollection of this, and I was like obsessed with anything Halloween at the time, and it's just bizarre to me that like this passed. I even remember like the NFL around that time did a thing like not dissimilar where they had like in-store displays with like the players as monsters. So this is probably something going on in marketing like a lot at that point.
Yeah, I don't remember this at all either as a kid, probably because it was on CBS. I don't think I had CBS as a kid. I think the only channels I really had was like Nickelodeon, and that's all I remember watching was Nickelodeon. I don't even remember watching the Disney Channel. So I'm pretty sure this one just flew over my head because it wasn't on Nickelodeon. It was on CBS of all places.
Yeah, it was on network television, and you know, who knows how I happened upon it, but I'm sure glad I did, and I'm glad that it stuck with me enough to like revisit when I got older. And good thing for us, there's a thing called YouTube, so you know, it's able to basically validate like weird thoughts that you had as a kid, like was this a real thing? And it turns out it was, and we sat down and watched it for all 22 minutes worth of its glory.
Was there ever a VHS release?
I don't think so. I mean, I could be wrong. Vinny, do you know that?
Yeah, I kind of dug through. I didn't see any indication of that. You know what, though? It's always one of those things when something was designed to be promotional, you can't help but think that maybe there were promotional copies out there given away or something, but I didn't see anything that indicated like video sales.
Yeah, I don't see anything either. If it was on VHS, I probably would have came across it. That would have been the only other way I would have seen this thing as a kid. I mean, I do remember begging my mom for some VHS Halloween tapes. I remember there was one called Witches and Stitches. I remember that one. I used to play that all the time as a kid. But man, if this was, I probably would have loved this more for nostalgic reasons if I would have seen it as a kid.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the reason why I appreciate it. If I came across it any other way, I'd be weirded out. I think I would skip to the next video.
It was a little weird, but I guess let's get into some of the plot of the story so people can know what we're talking about.
Sure. So I don't think it's like giving too much away at this point, like, you know, to have a spoiler alert for a made-for-TV special that came out in 91. So there's a lot of talk in this special of the word Kubi. And just something to know is that Kubi is code word, or it's alien for candy. And the plot kind of revolves around that. So we can jump into it. But I guess it is worth noting it's a Hanna-Barbera production. So there's also tons of references within the show itself, which is like, you know, a kid dressed up as Fred Flintstone and other stuff in the background, sort of Easter eggs that you get to see. And William Hanna himself is actually narrating this.
Okay.
So I thought that was cool. So we can jump into the plot.
Yeah, before we do that, we are going to mention Kubi a lot, because Kubi is basically just candy. And one thing that I kind of... The first thing I thought of was that sounds dangerously close to Scooby. And Scooby yeah. is Hanna-Barbera, so could that have been another reference too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all. You know, obviously, this is like a little bit of like mercenary work for Hanna-Barbera. It's not really a series. This is a paycheck.
Yeah.
So I would think, if I was running that company, I'd certainly want to squeeze in any nods that I could.
Right, and it's also no accident that these are Martians, and it's like for the Mars Corporation, right? So like there's a whole lot of like very kind of, some are obvious, some are not so obvious, but there's a whole bunch of that going on. Hopefully, like, I'd like to think they're just having fun with it, you know, and like they just kind of had that attitude too, where it's like, you know, screw it, we'll call it Kubi.
Yeah, and it didn't make much sense to me that these aliens spoke pretty good English, so why would Kubi be code word? Why didn't you just say candy? Like, I don't get it.
It's not a bad point, Lyle.
there's a couple plot holes in here.
That's one of many. So I guess let's get into the plot so we can start picking this thing apart. Because I'm gonna tell you guys now, I hated this thing.
Oh, no. I'll take full responsibility for that. I don't mind.
I loved it because it was nostalgic. I hate it because it made zero sense.
Yeah, this one was Steve's idea, if anyone else hated it too.
But the town needed to generate power from like a small stagnant water lake.
Oh my gosh, you're going to be started on that.
Okay, all right, so basically things move very quickly because it's only 22 minutes and they try to cram a lot in. So the opening sequence follows a dog who, in my notes I put, is arguably the best actor throughout a neighborhood on Halloween. But then stuff gets real when the main characters, it's a brother and his little sister, they establish that this Halloween could be a bit weird. It's the first since their mother passed away, so it does take like a dark turn right away.
And it's like immediate. This is like within the first like minute of the show that they introduce this plot point that you really don't need.
Yeah, and the young girl, I don't remember her name. I don't remember any of these characters' names.
It's Michael and Jeannie, the brother and sister.
Jeannie. Right. Jeannie says something that instantly caught my attention, where she goes, "Mom used to make Halloween special for us." And I wish my mom would have made Halloween special for me. My mom hated Halloween. She hated it with a passion.
Yeah, like moms typically, like my mom, I would have to argue to get like a new costume because I'd usually get hand-me-downs, and then like I'd sort of win the fight, like the good fight, and I'd get to wear what I wanted, and then instantly she's like, put a coat on. So like I ended up being Batman with like a denim jacket for a few years in a row.
Well, that's good though, because I mean, moms like to save money.
And then, like, oddly enough, the denim jacket Batman action figure came out a few years after, which we're still in litigation for that. But nice. You know, let's save it for a different time. So they almost get hit by a car, and the guy from Night Court appears and, like, tries to intimidate the kids further.
Bull.
So, yeah. So basically, this guy who's from Night Court, he kind of looks like a 90s version of Ray Donovan. He after almost running them over, he jumps out and puts his hands up like real creepy, and we're establishing that he's the henchman for the main villain, who's Mrs. Gisborne.
Gisborne.
Yeah, yeah, played by Rhea Perlman, who's arguably the biggest name in this special.
Yeah, it took me I saw this thing twice back to back, and
you're welcome.
Thank you. The first you sent it to me today. All right, so the first time I saw it, I was all like, hey, where's Rhea Perlman? I didn't see her once in this whole thing. I thought she was in here. And then on the second viewing, I looked closer and I was like, oh, wait a minute, that's her.
Yeah, in all fairness, I had like Rhea Perlman in my notes because it's like the biggest name that they put up during the opening credits, and I had to go to IMDb to figure out who she was. So you're not alone there.
Oh man, she looks so different.
Okay, so then an alien ship crash lands because obviously their Kubi meter malfunctioned. And then maybe insert soundbite here.
I can't believe he's doing all that candy in those five small balls.
We thank you, Michael. You have given us enough Kubi to last Quarlans.
Then we realize that the local candy factory may be closing, in which someone says, in front of these kids, they say this may be the last Halloween in Crystal Falls. So, like, in true 90s TV special spirit, they make sure to, like, crowbar the name of the special into the special.
And in the meantime, I've got to rely on all this expensive electrical power.
I'm sorry, Grant. I don't see how we can even finish out the production year. I'm afraid this looks like the last Halloween in Crystal Falls.
I want to point out at this point, too, that we're not really speeding through the plot here. This happens in this rapid of succession on screen. Like, this is just occurring with no setup.
Right, yeah. It happens much faster in the actual special. These kids now stumble upon the aliens in the woods. They're looking for a Kubi, and we do quickly establish that it's candy. So, you know, there's, like, the big plot twist. Then we cut to a lab where it's revealed that evil woman, played by Rhea Perlman, is kidnapping children for genetic research so that she can stay young. But, like, the one ingredient that she needs is water. So that'll come into play later.
Why doesn't she just go to an ocean?
She chose, like, a very small lake.
It's like a pool.
Yeah, in a suburban neighborhood. So then Bing, who's one of the alien characters, and so Bing gets captured by the henchmen because he was out trick-or-treating. Vinny, do I have that right?
Let me double check that. I think you are right because, okay. You know, these aliens are trick-or-treating now because, you know, their entire planet is devoid of candy or Kubi. And now they've found that if you just walk around on Earth on the night that they happen to get to Earth, you can get free Kubi.
What are the odds?
That sounds about right.
So then the kids discover the lab and they tell their dad, who immediately speeds off. The Kubi meter magically starts working again. So I guess that means like their spaceship will start working again. But within 30 seconds time, literally, the dad comes back with the sheriff and the two antagonists of the special arrested all in the same police car. So like everything happened already. Like the whole special happened. The plot's done.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed was that the kids were like, oh, the woman over there, she's doing all this bad stuff. And the dad goes, you guys stay here. I'm going to go get the cops.
And then they go, great.
That made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, he's completely negligent. All right, I think it's time to jump into fun facts because that's the special. Like, that's everything.
Yeah, and I think this is... I'm very comfortable right now because on Dissecting Fiction, often Christian will go in with these descriptions, then we'll start talking about it, and I'm ready to talk because holy crap, did I find a lot of information about 22 minutes of television special sponsored by a candy company.
Yeah, in all fairness, I think the fun facts are like this part of it, like the production is more interesting than the special itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as mentioned, it's a Hanna-Barbera production. What's really interesting about this is the only Hanna-Barbera 3D animation that was ever produced. They didn't go back into it in the last few years that they weren't under the Turner banner. This is really it. I think you can see those designs when you look at the four aliens, Gleep, Romtu, Scuta, and Bing. But it's kind of cool to think that, you know, just sort of right before Hanna-Barbera really stops being an active studio, that they do get to 3D animation like most of the successful studios do now.
Yeah, so on this special, like the CGI was done by ILM and PDI, which I think like is super interesting and also gives the special like a lot of much needed credibility. ILM responsible for Star Wars, PDI eventually becoming DreamWorks. Is that right, Vin?
They more get bought by DreamWorks, okay. And then end up working on a bunch of successful projects, including Shrek. The studio does close down in 2015, but that's largely because DreamWorks itself kind of only exists in name at this point. They're just kind of a place to hold properties. The active DreamWorks Studios productions aren't really a thing anymore.
Gotcha. And I think probably like the funniest thing I'm going to tell you here, Lyle, is this thing actually won an Emmy.
Like, you're
this,
kidding.
This special that you watched, this is an Emmy award-winning special.
What did it win?
For CGI, for the characters.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The exact award is the Emmy win for Outstanding Individual Achievement and Special Visual Effects. I think it's warranted. I mean, if you look at that animation, especially for 1991, it's super tight. Like, it looks good. The designs are simple, but it plays well. There's shadows cast by the characters. There's a lot of detail in it.
Yeah.
It does look actually really good.
Yeah. We're also looking at it under the lens of, like, 2020, like, what we're used to. So, I guess in 91, so about 30 years ago, this was, like, probably pretty cool to see. You know, like, I guess what they were hoping for was that kids would see it and then go to school the next day and talk about it.
And apparently that was just you, Steve.
Yeah. I didn't do it.
Could have just been me.
It's written by Sean Rock, or Roque, I'm not sure how he would pronounce it, and Savage Steve Holland. And it's directed by Savage Steve Holland, which I think is, like, the coolest thing about this. For those who don't know, Savage Steve Holland was responsible for films like Better Off Dead, One Crazy Summer. He would have just been coming off of How I Got Into College. And then from this point on, he becomes more of an animation and television director. So I don't know if this is like a turning point in his career, but it's just a really cool little detail that someone who had had a lot of success was directing. That might be another reason that the CGI plays really well in it, is it's someone with a really keen creative mind looking at those shots, whether or not the script is all that great.
Right. Yeah, there were a lot of like interesting things happening in the background on the production side of this special. So I remember in my original notes, I had something about Turner purchasing Hanna-Barbera in 91, which is like right when this was released. So part of me can't help but wonder if this was a giant R&E or R&D experiment that they were just like spending money and like trying stuff out because they knew they were getting bought out. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't doubt that at all. Just as you're saying, the timing is kind of suspicious. You figure that this had to be in production probably earlier in the year. It's not incredibly long, so it could have been pretty tight to it. I think Turner buys out Hanna-Barbera in December, if I'm correct. So this really would have only been a 2-month gap, but they did largely do that because of Cartoon Network. Turner wanted more material that they didn't have to pay anyone for, basically.
Right. Oh, was that the year that Cartoon Network premiered?
I don't think it premieres that year. It might be 92. I don't have that in my notes, but I'm trying to just remember.
I actually do remember when it happened, because my mind was blown that there was a channel that had nothing but cartoons on it.
Same. I remember it. I remember it was Channel 63 in New York City Cablevision. And I remember when the channel, you know, just came on. And like you said, it was 24-hour cartoons. And it was just unbelievable. Because I remember, like, it was such a thrill to see cartoons late at night. So, like, it delivered on all levels.
Yeah, I think that's where I first started watching Scooby-Doo. It had to have been. I don't think I would have caught it anywhere else.
Yeah, they definitely played a lot of Scooby-Doo, Josie and the Pussycats. There were things like Thundar, the Barbarian. There was a lot of Hanna-Barbera when Cartoon Network went live. Space Ghost.
Yeah, Johnny Bravo.
Right, that was like the Craig McCracken stuff that that they did exclusively for Cartoon Network, I think, right, Ben?
Yeah, there was some of that. I mean, at that point, Hanna-Barbera had such a library. I mean, if you were going to launch the Cartoon Network, that's the company you would buy. Just endless amount of successes. And then, you know, a few years later when Turner, I think, officially merged but was more bought by, you know, Time Warner, they kind of made themselves the only other company that was really competing with Disney. Just between Warner Brothers and Hanna-Barbera, animation in, you know, the 20th century is almost completely dominated outside of Disney.
Right, and obviously Hanna-Barbera would be the more attainable of the two.
Right. I mean, there were points where Disney looked like weak enough to buy, and there were certainly attempts, but it was an intentional move to try to build basically a library that you couldn't fight.
Right, and then there's interesting. There's also Ted Turner sort of like doing things like that, like just that he likes. Like, I'm rich enough to buy like my favorite shows, because I think he was a Hanna-Barbera fan, because I remember TBS like always playing a lot of Flintstones and stuff.
Yeah, no, Turner always went with what he liked. I mean, it's why he bought the largest parts of the NWA, the Braves.
Yeah.
You know, created WCW out of like the ashes of the NWA. He knew what people would go to his channels for, and he seemed to be a pretty big fan of it. So that was always a successful formula for him, so I don't doubt at all that he probably really loved those cartoons. I mean, another cool thing about this is who was cast as the four aliens. Two of them are actually Frank Welker, who is best known as Megatron. You could probably figure out that one of them is Scooter because of his really deep voice. Gleep is played by Paul Williams, a pretty prolific songwriter. He was also the Penguin on Batman the Animated Series, which is where I always hear his voice in my head as the Penguin. And then you also get Don Messick, who was a Hanna-Barbera regular throughout most of their big periods. This is a Hanna-Barbera production. Regardless of the plot being really rushed, it still has this pedigree to it that's kind of cool. And I mean, I can't help but make the argument that when watching this, with all of the little things they drop in, like the death of the mother, you know, the genetic experiments, all these sort of little ideas, I feel like there might have been a version of this script that was like an hour and a half long that actually developed something.
I want to see the Snyder cut of this.
There is a lot of plot points in this thing that just seem like it could have been much better if this was an hour and a half. Like you were saying, the death of the mother was definitely one of those things where it could have been padded out more, but I don't know why they tried to rush it. Maybe it was just something that they wanted to put out just to put out. But I don't know. I don't know about this thing. I really don't.
Well, even like, you know, what Steve was saying too, like this could have been like more of an experiment than we were aware of, considering who's behind it. You know, like you're picking a director of a pretty decent pedigree. You're picking actors and a production team that are no joke. I wouldn't doubt it if this was sort of them going, okay, we're getting paid for to produce a 22-minute special. We want to try to get into these new areas of animation. Let's use this as an excuse to just play around.
Yeah, and some of the characters are slightly reminiscent of Jar Jar Binks.
But taking a look here, it looks like Rio Perlman was from Cheers, obviously. Cheers was from CBS. It was a CBS show. And I was going to see if, because Bull is on here from Night Court, I was going to see if Night Court was a CBS show. It's from NBC. So it's not something that NBC wanted. At least I don't think so. I mean, they had Rio Perlman. Who was, I don't know. I'm trying to see if there's a connection with why it was on CBS instead of it being on, like, why wasn't it on Nickelodeon or one of those channels? Why was it on CBS? CBS to me doesn't seem like a child show or a network.
I would say that you know, casting wise, you're going to get a lot of different input into who they'd want there. I think you're probably right on the Rhea Perlman. It seems like Cheers was produced by CBS, but not actually aired. It was on NBC. So
that does happen.
Yeah, this is, you know, going to be a lot of that confusion. I mean, I just looked at the distribution. So Cheers was distributed by Paramount, which is CBS. Night Court was Warner Brothers distribution, but that means so little through the 90s. Like, Warner Brothers distribution for television was so many sitcoms. Like, stuff that aired on ABC, stuff that aired on Fox, it was all different. I would just guess that this was like an availability thing.
Yeah, there were people calling in a lot of favors to get this done, and rightfully so.
I'm sure.
Yeah, there was definitely a phone call that ended with, get me Perlman, and like a hang-up. Like.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems weird who's in here, where they did it, and why they did it. Like, I don't know. I should try to track down some of these people and be like, so, do you remember the last Halloween?
I think they're available.
But I was just looking at this on IMDb. They have the thing that some dude took from the TV Guide, like the advertisement for it.
Right.
It gives Richard Mull, which is the Bull from Night Court, he's billed first. I don't know how that happened. Rio Perlman is underneath. And right underneath that, it says, can four little Martians and the kids of Crystal Falls save their town from those two meanies, meaning the two that we see on the thing? And then it has a question mark. And I was like, okay, cool. So they're teaching grammar. And then right next to that, it says, will it be, ellipsis, the last Halloween? No question mark. So
everyone's the end, really.
Very provocative.
I don't know. It's so weird. So I guess if we don't have much to say, let's give our final thoughts on this thing.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. I recommend it for anyone listening to watch this. It's available on YouTube for free, just for a little bit of your time. And let me tell you, it's a good investment.
Yeah, I'm with Steve on this. I think for the amount of time it's on your screen, even if you hate it, it's still worth it. And if you're a big fan of animation, it's kind of a cool oddity just to check out some really nice 3D animation from 1991, long before Disney gets involved, and we have like Toy Story in 95, and everyone knows what to look for. And a savage Steve Holland. I mean, better off dead. Come on, support everything he does.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I will be the honest one. This thing is one of those things where if you want to catch some nostalgic 90s Halloween stuff, go watch it. The first 5 minutes are gonna blow your mind, trust me, because this looks 100% like a 90s Halloween thing. It's exactly the same way I remember Halloween. But everything after that, I mean, it's very rushed. You get in it, you go, and then that's the end of it. There's really nothing is padded out. It's just constant.
There's no pacing.
Yeah, you're just getting constantly hit by something where if you're not paying attention, like I wasn't the first time, I had to watch it again. You just miss these things. And if you're not going to do anything, you want to catch some nostalgic stuff, I say, why not? It's on YouTube. It's free. Just get on it and watch it. All right, guys. So that's going to do it for this episode. Why don't you guys go ahead and give us your podcast again?
Sure. You can check out the Dissecting Fiction podcast. We're on most major podcast platforms. You type Dissecting Fiction into Google, you're going to find us all over the place. You won't hear Steve too much, though he is popping up a little more often. Expect to hear me and my friend Christian dig into some good fiction.
Yeah. All right, guys. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Halloween Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or want to suggest anything for a future show, go ahead and send those to thehalloweenpodcast@gmail.com. You could also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thehalloweenpodcast. We're on Twitter at thehalloweenpod. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for coming on, and hopefully I could have you on again.
Thanks, Lyle.
Thanks, Lyle. It's been a pleasure.